Once upon a time, there was a dog. 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 Basically a dog. And this dog, he was sitting on the side of the road one day, minding his own business, sniffing his armpits. Well, now, I know what you're thinking there. You think, oh Christ, the dog's armpits are going to be a whole 20 minutes on the anatomy of a dog's armpits now. Well, no, you're mistaken there. Relax. Dogs don't have armpits. They don't even have arms. Although I understand in the veterinary world, they'll sometimes refer to an animal's front legs as its arms and its front paws as its hands, just for simplicity. Well, no, we all know they're not arms. And more importantly, those are not armpits. No, they're more akin to the space between the top of your thighs and your undergroin. What's that called? I'm not sure. What's the pit of your leg called? It's not exactly the same, I know, because it's... Or is it? Wait a minute. I don't think there's a name for the area at the top of your inner thigh where it meets and folds over the rest of your person like an armpit. I don't think it's called a leg pit, is it? No. Is that even part of the legs? I think the legs are usually considered the part below the knees, and the upper bit is kind of your trunk or something. Well, you don't grow leaves on it. You grow other things that fall off eventually. Hair. The hair are the leaves of the human trunk. But that's nothing to do with the dog. That's nothing to do with the dog. Let's not go putting all that onto the dog. The dog isn't here to form the basis of a study of human anatomy. As regards to... I first heard that word trunk, referencing part of the human body that's known as a trunk. I think I first came across that about 7 or 8 years ago on some television program. I remember it being quite striking. I thought, oh, so it's part of the body called a trunk. What in the name of Christ is that? Well, apparently it's part of the torso. It's a part that's kind of part of the torso, and I think the upper legs, perhaps. Basically the middle of the body. The middle of the body, you find the trunk. You chopped off your legs just above the knees, and if you chopped off, I think, the top part of your torso, perhaps. Or maybe, does the trunk include your whole upper torso? I don't think so. I'm not sure. Although there isn't really a point at which you can separate the top part of your upper torso from the bottom part of your upper torso. Is there? No, it's not like there's a fold across the middle somewhere across the top of the stomach you can easily separate. There's certainly no joint there. There's no joint halfway along your upper body. No. I suppose then the trunk probably goes up to your collar. It doesn't stop at the top of the stomach or somewhere. No, because there's no natural place for it to end. Now on a tree, again, that's even more complicated because the trunk, I suppose, it kind of separates at the top. It turns into separate branches. I suppose one of the branches is considered the continuation of the trunk until it gets narrow enough to not be a main trunk anymore, I suppose. It's a bit vague, but that's tree anatomy again. That's a whole different thing, tree anatomy. I know trees have trunks, but tree anatomy is very different from human anatomy. And human anatomy is very different from both tree anatomy and dog anatomy. We're talking about the dogs. The dog was sitting at the side of the road, minding its own business, sniffing its armpits. I don't mean it was continuously sniffing its armpits, like it was having a good long sniffing session of its armpits. No, it just sniffed them once. In fact, it was quite discreet about it. It barely even moved its head. It just thought for a moment, I wonder how my armpits are doing, and then just sniffed the air to see if there's any odour coming from its armpits. And he determined that there was an odour coming from his armpits, but he didn't determine that it was an unpleasant odour. Because not all odours are unpleasant. They are not. Especially if you're a dog or any animal that just follows its base natural instincts. Smells are there to tell you that there's something wrong. And if the dog doesn't smell blood coming from its armpits, or it doesn't smell something terrible coming from its armpits, heard something dangerous coming from his arm. Fitzfang, it takes. No, that's perfectly fine. No problem with the smell there. What am I going to do? Get a dog deodorant and use it? No, there's nothing wrong. It's perfectly natural smell. I'm not ashamed of smelling like a dog. Because I am a dog. I know you humans would be ashamed if you smelled of a dog. Because you're not a dog. How do many of you have dogs and you go around smelling like dogs all day and you're perfectly fine with it? Of course, in the old days, you used to just drown that out with cigarettes. You go around smelling of cigarettes. And then if you didn't like people knowing that you were obsessed with cigarettes, you get a dog and hopefully the dog would be strong enough to drown out the smell of the cigarettes. Or else if you didn't want people knowing that you had a dog, you get cigarettes and hope that the cigarettes drown out the smell of the dog. And that's why cigarettes used to come in different flavors. Some of them would want a very strong cigarette. It could drown out the smell of their double life as a dog owner. And then there would be others who just wanted mild cigarettes that were mild enough to be drowned out by the smell of a dog, which they intentionally owned just so they could continue smoking discreetly. And that was all very fine until one day someone came along and said, right, cigarettes are dangerous. We've decided cigarettes are dangerous. For some reason, I think it's because it's something to do with the fact that you're burning your insides out and pouring poisons into them every day of your life for 80 years. That's considered somewhat risky to your person nowadays. Now, don't we know how the human body works? We don't know how the dog body works. So we don't worry about dog smoking, not least because they don't. Although there's probably some circus act where the dog used to smoke while it was swinging off the trapeze. And the elephant man would come out and say, oh, look, this dog is smoking a cigarette and smells like shit and his armpits smell disgusting. That'll distract from my face. Not that the elephant man should have to hide his face or find a dog smoking to distract from it. The elephant man is perfectly entitled to have a face like that. And an elephant is perfectly entitled to have the face of a human. It's not like an elephant or a man went to a plastic surgeon and said, please make me look like another species in an especially hideous way. No, they were born like that. There's a TV cosmetic ad that ends, maybe she's born with it, and then the song comes on, it'll jingle, and it says, maybe it's Maybelline, which is contradicting that maybe she's born with it. Unless the implication is that maybe she was born to a parent who was Maybelline, who had Maybelline for life bred into her genes, and that, I don't know. Don't really care about that, to be perfectly honest. But that's the dog's armpits for you. Now, we're in danger of getting into dog anatomy again. I've done dog anatomy several times over the past year. We're becoming a bit obsessed with dog anatomy, and I don't want to be. It's a bit repetitive. So we'll leave it at that. We'll move on from the dog anatomy now. I wonder, would there be any value in having an assistance dog whose main role for the owner, who's either a former smoker or a would-be smoker or a reluctant non-smoker or someone whose very life depends on not smoking. Would there be any value in having an assistance dog who smokes? But by the dog smoking and having that general smoking odour constantly in the owner's region, the owner can harmlessly enjoy some of the benefits of being a smoker without actually smoking. I wonder would that be. Now, that would be considered cruel, of course. People would consider that cruel. They say that dog is being forced to smoke. Well, it's obviously not. You can't force a dog to do anything. You can ask a dog to do something, or you can train it to do something, but you can't force it. No. You can bring a dog to water, but you can't make it drink. It just so happens that it's thirsty. When they say you'd bring a horse to water, they're not saying you bring it into the ensuite bathroom there and turn on the tap. No, because you certainly couldn't make it drink then. But if you dragged the horse to water and the water fountain or the spring or the well or wherever you get your water from, if it's for an animal, perhaps you're getting it out of a local pond or a lake. You bring the horse all the way to the lake or the spring or whatever, By the time it gets there, it's in need of a beverage, so it's thirsty, so it voluntarily drinks. See, it wouldn't need to make a drink. You can bring a horse to water, but you don't have to make a drink because it's probably thirsty. And if it's not thirsty, that's not a problem either. If it's not thirsty, it's not thirsty. The body knows best, unless there's something wrong with the body, in which case it's probably not going to make it to the water. In which case, it'd be well advised to bring a booker with you just in case. Because if you bring a horse all the way to the water, and it's a mile or two away, and the horse still doesn't want to drink, and you can't force it, best thing you can do there is have a booker with you, carry the water back home so that when the horse does want to drink, you have one ready, because otherwise you're being cruel. Now the question is whether or not to make the horse carry the water bucket back, because if the horse is weak, you don't want to be forcing it to carry something. You make it carry a heavy bucket of water, then by the time you get home, it might have built up a thirst. You might be helping the horse in that way. I don't know, I know very little about horses. I saw a dead horse once, lying in the middle of a field, somewhere in the foothills of the Wicklow Mountains. Someone had a dead horse that they were keeping in a field for some reason. I think possibly they hadn't found it yet, or they had found it and they just left it there until they were in a position to remove it. I presume it had just died that day. It wasn't like they were abandoning the dead horse, no. I have no reason to believe it was being abandoned. Or anything like that. I presume if it was, the authorities came along and dealt with whoever had abandoned the horse. It was in the field though, it was obviously a field that someone owned. So how do you abandon a horse in your own field? No, that doesn't make sense. If you're going to abandon a horse, you'd abandon it in someone else's field. Otherwise, you may be mistreating it, but you're not abandoning it. If I kidnap you and put you in a cell in my basement and keep you there for 10 years, I'm not abandoning you. No, I'm doing quite the opposite. And that doesn't make it okay. It does not make it okay. I have no business going around capturing people and putting them in my basement. Fortunately for everybody, including myself, this house doesn't have a basement. In fact, it's the least basement-y house I've ever lived in. The floors are solid concrete. I don't think there's any way you could get to a basement under this. I've lived in houses before where the bottom floor has floorboards and the back of the house is quite high up, so you could conceivably have a basement space under there. You just have to make the access to it. But no, this house, no. You stamp on these floors, I can tell you, you break your foot. Just occurred to me. I quite often stub my toe. Usually blame it on being vision impaired and rather clumsy. I stub my toe quite a bit. It just occurred to me. Is that because I'm living in a house with very concretey floors? I'm not sure. Floors do have coverings on them. There's wooden floors and carpets and things on top of the floors. But underneath they're concrete. I wonder, are you more likely to stub? Because I usually stub my toes on either the furniture or a vertical structure, such as, for example, the wall or a skirting board, the side of a dresser, the side of a bed, something like that. Can you stub your toe on the floor? I'm not sure you can, unless you're very much pointed the wrong way. Would you not have to be facing the floor directly? You'd have to be face down in the air, hovering over the floor, and then for some reason you lose weightlessness and then you drop straight down to the floor. That's the only way you could stub your toe on the floor, surely, is it? I'm not sure. Does your toe have to be perpendicular to the surface upon which you stub it? I never thought about this before. Maybe you do. I suppose you can stub it diagonally. Surely you can't stub your toe on the floor unless you're... I suppose if you're lying face down in the bed and you decide to maneuver out of the bed by putting your feet down on the floor first, and you lower your feet towards the floor, and then you get to the floor and you don't stop early enough and you bash your toes into the floor. I suppose that's possible. So you could, no, I take it back. You could stub your toe on the floor if you've been lying face down in the bed and you get out of the bed feet first. Yes, that's perfectly possible. I take that back. I stub my toe in bed sometimes against an adjacent drawer near the foot of my bed that sometimes I accidentally leave open. That's a drawer that's full of cans of cat treats. Now, I know what you're thinking there. You think, why does he have cans of cat treats in his bed? I don't. They're in a drawer near the foot of the bed because that's where the cats have their supper treat. is perfectly innocent and it's perfectly legitimate. Our cat's expected to treat at supper time. Like any normal household, we don't have children. We give our pets, anyone who's of child age in the house, gets a supper time treat of maybe a can of tuna pate shared between the three or four of them, whoever else you have. I'm not in charge of distributing these meals. I do breakfast. I don't do supper. I know I do stub my toes on that drawer sometimes if I accidentally leave it open. It's a basket drawer. When there's tins in it, it gets rather solid. So yes, that's possible. So if you're thinking of stubbing your toe, if you're a new homeowner, setting up all your safety things before you start your family or whatever you do, you're thinking about things like smoke detectors and child gates and whatever other safety things you need, and you're thinking, wait, what can should I make for the possibility of stubbing toes? I've never been a homeowner before, so obviously I've never stubbed my toe, and I've no concept of whether or not it's a big risk or anything. I see ads on the television all the time for things like what to do if you smell gas. If you smell gas, apparently what you're supposed to do is open all the windows, turn off the gas, ring Gas Networks Ireland, no matter who your supplier is, and then a woman will turn up and get out of a van across the road from your house for some reason. And while she's crossing the road, she'll sort of look back to the camera and just finish saying, and then ring Bord Gáis Networks, or ring Gas Networks Ireland, no matter who your supplier. And then she'll turn around the other way and say hello to the people who are coming out of the house. She goes, hello, how are you? That's the current version of that ad, which I just saw last night for the first time. The previous version of that ad had a man getting out of the van. And the man getting out of the van in his version of that commercial made a big deal of looking left and right before he crossed the road. He showed him looking left and right before he crossed the road. And then he said to the camera, and then no matter who your supplier called, but Gas Networks Ireland, and then he crossed the road and approached the house. He wasn't saying hello to the people. I think they weren't waiting outside the house for him. Maybe that's because that ad didn't succeed in telling them that you should get out of your house if possible. That's why they weren't there. The new ad that I saw where there was a woman doing it, before she gets to the house, she's saying hello to the people at the house. Presumably they're standing outside. But she didn't say in the instructions to get out of the house. No, she just said open the windows, turn off the gas and ring Gas Networks. So I suppose maybe those people are just being a bit much, being drama queens about it. Said, oh, you better get out of the house now and stand here. I don't know. I don't know if you can even see the people in it. You just see her crossing the road. Either way, you're a new homeowner, a young person. You somehow managed to purchase a home in this country, which is quite an amazing feat. So well done. You want to protect your amazing feet. You're worried now about stubbing your toe. You're thinking, I've never owned a house before, so I've absolutely no knowledge of how toe stubbing is done. I've been living in these apartments where it's all just a mattress, no furniture. The floor is covered in either empty cans of beer, which you can't stub your toe on, but you can't injure yourself. Luckily, there's a new regime now where all your cans of beer have a huge refundable deposit on them, so you're not going to keep them hanging around in your house until they build up and become dangerous. You've no experience of stubbing your toe. You've never had anything that you could stub your toe on. Although now that I think about it, if you're sleeping on a mattress on an empty floor, you could quite easily stub your toe on that, in the same way that I just described stubbing my toe if I'm lying face down. Although I don't lie face down, I sleep on my side. If you're lying face down on a mattress and there's no bed, I presume it's even easier to stub your toe then because you're closer to the floor. But maybe you stub it with less force because you're closer to the floor. You've less distance for your toe to travel, so it doesn't build up that much force. And the floor doesn't build up any force at all because the floor isn't moving. I suppose there's that. So you're probably thinking, what do I do now? I'm a homeowner. I'll get smoke detectors. I know about smoke detectors. I know about what to do if I smell gas. I don't know what to do about stubbing my toe. What do I do about stubbing your toe? Well, I think you're worrying a bit too much, if you don't mind me saying so. I stub my toe a lot because of my vision impairment. It has made me clumsy. You're planning for failure. That's what you're doing. You're thinking, I'm going to start stubbing my toe now. I'm a homeowner. The next thing that happens now is going to start getting old. I'm going to start stubbing my toe every 5 minutes. Every opportunity I get, I'm going to stub my toe. And then people are going to go, that fella's stubbing his toe every 5 minutes. We have to put him into a home. And you'll have to go, this is my home. I've paid a mortgage on it. It's my home. And then someone will come up to the door and say, hello, I'm from the bank. You've just said you're paying your mortgage, but you've missed the last three payments. What's going on? Why are you lying? And you'll say, because it's a fictional podcast. It's not a diary or a documentary. It's all fictional. And the fellow there will say, that means I don't exist. And you'll say, yes, that means you don't exist, person from the bank. You're a work of fiction. And the person from the bank will say, well, he'll say whatever you want him to say because he's your work of fiction. He's not mine. You created him in your mind. So I don't know how that works. Suffice to say, I think you're worrying a bit too much about your tall. And that's perhaps the reason you're able to afford a house is because you were a professional footballer or something. Or, a toe model. If you're a toe model, does it really matter if your toe is broken? Well, it's broke. That's an internal injury. It's not going to affect how it looks on camera, is it? Maybe it is. I don't know. I've never been a toe model. Maybe it's different for you. You have several toes, though. If you break one, you've got at least nine more. I know they're not all interchangeable. But when people are asking for a toe model, do they ask for a specific toe? Because unless that's the case, then you can just show whichever toe is looking best on that day. If you play your cards right, you can start using your fingers as substitute for your toes. If you're doing the camera work at home and you're just sending them the pictures, then you can just disguise one of your fingers as a toe. Proper makeup on, put it against a carpeted surface so it looks like it's on the ground or wherever. That should be no problem. You stub one toe and you're a toe model. In this day and age where it's all done over the internet and you do all your own camera work, you've got 19 other digits at your disposal. I wouldn't worry too much about it if I were you. Just don't go climbing Mount Everest. People lose multiple digits to frostbite when they go and climb Mount Everest. So you don't want to... I know you've got 19 spares, but you don't want to be losing 5 or 6 of those. No. No, no, no. So don't do that. One thing you don't hear much of, strangely enough, I've just realised, is people stubbing their heels. And you might think, well, that's because people generally aren't walking backwards all the time. Just like when you're driving, there are occasionally times when you drive backwards for short distances, or when you're manoeuvring into a parking space or something. But in general, driving, you're not reversing. You're going forwards, and the same is true of the human foot. When you're using your feet, you're travelling forwards, so you're more likely to stub your toe than you are to stub your heel. I don't know about that. Is that true? Because as I've just explained earlier, you can stub your toe from lying face down on a mattress and then bashing your toe into the floor. You think then that a lot of people lie on their backs all the time, or a lot of the time, a lot of people sleep lying on their backs, so just by that reasoning, it would be perfectly obvious that there'd be occasion to stub the heel of your foot very easily against the floor. So that's nonsense. There's this whole thing that you can't stub your heel. That's absolute nonsense. It's fake. Fake, false, fake news that's being put out by probably some foot conglomerate, some shoe conglomerate like Nike. Probably put it around that you can't stub your heel. That's impossible. The most dangerous part of your body that you can injure very easily is the front of your foot. I don't know why it would be to Nike's advantage to promote toe stubbing over heel stubbing. What possible advantage could there be to that for Nike? Are their shoes more heel protective than Adidas or something? I don't know. Do Adidas or Puma or the other ones, do they have much to say about toe stubbing or heel stubbing? Or the ratio of toe stubbing to heel stubbing? I don't know. Maybe they don't want to start the conversation because they know that if they're a shoe company and they start bringing up toe stubbing and heel stubbing, the first thing a responsible journalist or a shopper or consumer rights advocate is going to demand is that they provide figures for how many toes get stubbed and how many heels get stubbed, even if the rate is very low, if these shoes are very safe. And the reason the way you show they're very safe is by showing the figures, and by definition there's going to be some figures for people getting their heels stubbed or their feet stubbed or their toes stubbed. You've 10 toes, so presumably you've 10 times as many opportunities to stub a toe as you have a heel. So that's the thing, that's what makes the numbers unreliable. for every time you stub your heel once, you have 10 chances to stub a toe because you have 10 toes and all of your toes are traveling at the same time. It's not like you leave some of your toes at home sometimes. No. Every time you go for a walk, you've got 11 places where you can stub each foot. Oh no, wait. You've 6 places on each foot you can stub normally. If you're 5 toes and you're 1 heel on each foot. So that's 10 toes, 2 heels. So each time you go for a walk, you've 6 times more chances of stubbing a toe than you have of stubbing a heel. So even if nobody is stubbing their toes or heels at all in these shoes, there's going to be 1 or 2 people who do it. So there's going to be 1 person who stubs their heels maybe once a month. And for every 1 time that you stub your heel, basic maths, for every 1 heel that's stubbed, there's going to be 5 toes getting stubbed. So 1 person gets their heel stubbed. By definition, if that implies that there's 5 toes being stubbed for every 1 heel. The laws of statistics and averages. So I don't know, I can understand why you wouldn't want to bring that up. Do these shoe companies, you never see them in the ads, though. Do they talk about the possibility of stubbing your toes or heels? I don't think so. I think they sell separate products like insoles and toe protectors and heel protectors that they sell separately as an add-on. You buy in the pharmacy or in the shoe shop, but you don't buy them with the shoes because they don't want to. I don't know, maybe it's extra money that way or else. They don't want people buying their shoes and thinking about toe injuries or heel injuries because they'll associate that with the brand. You don't want to see a big Nike swoosh on the television somewhere on the back of some rapper's t-shirt or on some billboard somewhere and think, oh Christ, Nike swoosh. That makes me think of injury, very painful injury. Stubbing your toes is almost as bad as a toothache, except thankfully, unlike a toothache, it usually goes away after a minute. I don't know. I really don't. I don't know how any of that works. I've never worked in marketing. I've never worked in sales. I've worked in offices. I've worked in offices doing clerical jobs. There was no such thing as feet or toes being stubbed in my work. I didn't have any involvement in that. I had involvement in mad cow disease. I did figures involving testing for mad cow disease on cows. Now, these are animals that go around. You don't wear shoes at all. Horses wear shoes. Cows don't. But the cows are getting the mad cow disease. Now, that's a disease of the brain, as you may know. Mad cow disease is very unprevalent in this country because we're very careful about testing. And I used to look at these spreadsheets and you see all these figures about all these tests being done. You see all these perfectly healthy cows and the tests will come back. Yeah, that cow is fine. That cow is fine. That cow is fine. Don't know the science of it. I was a clerical worker. I wasn't a vet. These cows are being employed as footballers or as motorbike couriers or whatever, anything like that. They'd be expected to protect their brains by wearing a helmet. Well, no, you're at risk of BSE just from doing your job as being edible. Your whole existence is to exist to be edible, and it's this brain disease that could ruin that for you, because no one's going to eat you if you have a brain disease called BSE or mad cow disease. No. Because, you know, mad cow disease equates to mad human disease. You don't want that. You don't want it transferring over. So surely you'd wear a helmet. An edible helmet, perhaps. I don't know. Is there such a thing as an edible helmet? I'm not sure. And I know that sounds weird, an edible helmet. But there's more than meets the eye to human helmets, I can tell you. When you're wearing a human helmet on your motorbike and you knock your head against something, the helmet is designed to crack. It's designed to crack. So why wouldn't you have a helmet that's designed to be eaten if there's something wrong with your brain to protect your brain? Oh, wait. I suppose I wouldn't necessarily work. Maybe. I don't know. It depends what a cow helmet would be. I don't think they've ever worked on the design for a cow helmet or what it would entail. It wouldn't necessarily be about keeping the mad cow disease in the brain. It might be a protective barrier that prevents the disease from spreading into the meat. That's what he'd want. And it would also at the same time protect the cow against whatever comes into your blood or your food or something, but surely if some sort of barrier if you're wearing a contraceptive device, that's a barrier that blocks stuff coming in, biological stuff. So why wouldn't you have a helmet that stops mad cow disease from getting into your skull? It's a helmet of sorts. I think I'm probably causing confusion by calling it a helmet. Obviously, it's not going to be a helmet of the type that's made of these fancy plastics and has a visor on it and stuff. No, it's a biological helmet. Protects the brain in some way. Blocks whatever diseases you're trying to block from getting in or out. Contains them. Why would you not want that? And then, of course, you'd want that to be edible. Part of the process of meat production is that every part of the animal should be edible if at all possible. It's a business after all, so an edible biological helmet for a cow could be the future of whatever this is. Now, I know what you're thinking there. You're thinking, wait a minute. Wait a minute, he said you wear a helmet to play football. I know, it's just the Americans do that. The crazy Americans do that. Normal footballers over here don't go around in helmets. Well, that's not entirely true. Well, for one thing, there's a lot of Americans. They make up a large percentage of the population of the world. Something like, is there 300 million of them or something? I know that's still 7 billion people in the world. It's not really a big majority, but still, it's quite a lot of them. There's certainly more Americans than there are of us. There's something like 4.5 million of us, and there's 300 million Americans, something along those lines. And I know you're also thinking, wait a minute, that's wrong though, because Gaelic football involves helmets, or at least it did when I was 7 years old and playing Gaelic football or hurling in school, they make you wear a helmet. Oh wait, I don't know if it was for the football, but certainly for hurling. You put on a helmet to protect your head, because you're running around with these little sticks that you were supposed to hit a ball with somehow from the age of about 7. For the 2 years that I was in that primary school, we were forced not at gunpoint. To say we were forced at gunpoint would be a bit of an exaggeration. It was really just a metaphor. Of course, you weren't forced to do anything at gunpoint. It's actually a very nice school. I like that school. It's like saying I was forced at gunpoint to partake in spending afternoons helping the painter who was painting a nice mural on the school shed. No, we had a great time there. It was great. And even if I had been forced at gunpoint to do that, it would have been in a fun way. That school, in fact. That school was a lot of fun. It's the first school I went to after we moved up from County Kilkenny to a place called Greystones in the outer suburbs of Dublin. They were building a playing field. They had about 4 bulldozers. I think they were bulldozers or something similar. They looked like bulldozers to me. They had bulldozers and huge dump trucks of the sort that you'd usually only expect to see on the A-team or something. They had these gigantic trucks that were landscaping this back field on this relatively new school, and you can see them out the window. It was cool. You can see a field being built from scratch. You don't see that in nature. You rarely see a field being constructed from scratch in nature. Maybe there was a field there already, but it was being turned into a playing field. I suppose that's a slightly different thing than what Mother Nature makes. It was being flattened out and landscaped. It seemed to take ages, for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, there were these huge machines going around. Maybe they were just there to entertain us. And that same school, they got a painter in who took charge of painting a big long mural of a landscape of the sun and landscapes and things. And we all took turns going out. You were told, bring in one of your father's old shirts or something and use that to keep the paint off you. They sent out 2 of us for an hour at a time under the supervision of this artist. It's a fella in the beard, and he come around and say, see that sun there, you paint that with this yellow paint, and then you see that green stuff there, that's going to be grass, so you paint that with the green stuff. I don't remember what I painted, I think it might have been the green grass stuff. And now that I think about it, he probably thought, oh, that fella, we'll give him the easy bit to do. He'll say, here's the green stuff, it goes at the bottom, paint that green, that's going to be the grass. It doesn't even have to look like grass. It can just be a big blob of green. That school was fun. The boys in the class were sent to play hurling and the girls were sent to play rounders. And hurling involved putting on the helmet. There was a Gaelic game called hurling under the umbrella of Gaelic games, which is Gaelic football and hurling and something else. I don't know what else. It's probably something else. For hurling, you put on a helmet and you go around with these sticks. There's a ball. You're a 7-year-old boy running around with a stick. And say, now that stick, it's not for hitting people. It's not for injuring people. It's purely for the purpose of getting to that tiny little ball there and making it move in the direction that you want it to move and not into someone's face. So somehow I got through those 2 years and still thought it was fun. Then we went on in the next school. I think we played Gaelic football. Don't think we wore helmets there. So no, you're right. We don't all wear helmets playing football over here. Isn't that what I said, though? Or maybe I don't know. Whatever I said, I don't know whether I started this by saying we don't use helmets over here or we do use helmets over here. Either way, the information I've just given will help you decide which is correct. You can sort it out yourself. And then I went to a secondary school that was into rugby. Because it was very close to Lansdowne Road Rugby Stadium. So rugby was played there. I didn't play rugby. I was told by my father that rugby was a violent sport, not to be played by anyone. It's for thugs and scumbags. Well, he didn't say scumbags. He would never use language like that. Certainly, if he did, he wouldn't expect me to broadcast it here. Well, he didn't. No, he didn't, he said. He didn't call them ruffians either, but that would be the type of language he might have used were he to say something like that. What would he say? I think he might have said tykes. My father referred to ill-behaved louts as tykes. Tykes was a word in his day that you used for badly behaved youngsters. He'd say, tykes, where's a tyke? You look like a tyke in that casual jacket. Casual jacket was a type of clothing we'd wear that you might call a summer jacket or a light rain jacket or something. I think with a zip on it and two pockets and kind of plasticky. He considered them to be, well, firstly, he called them an arse freezer because it wasn't an overcoat. It came down to the waist. So he'd wear this jacket. He'd say, oh, you're an arse freezer. That's called a casual jacket. Now, what didn't help was that I had a sibling who was intellectually disabled and thought it was called a casualty jacket. And that added extra confusion. Eventually, we wore casual jackets. I was bought a reasonably respectable one, whatever was available in the reasonably low-priced clothing shop where you go to bring your child to get them reasonably priced clothing. It wasn't anything extreme or fancy. It was just a casual jacket, a zip on it. What's important to me is the pockets. Things need to have pockets on them with zips. Pockets with zips. And not some stupid diagonal pocket with a zip. The minute you open it, gravity tears your whole coat asunder. Everything falls out of the top. What's the point in having a pocket with a zip if you open the zip and it's already almost upside down? It's like having a zip while you're floating around in zero gravity. The top of every pocket where the zip is should be perfectly horizontal. There should be no such thing as a diagonal zip or a diagonal opening on the pocket. That's ridiculous. Unless you're talking about pockets for your hands, but those are just places to put your hands. Those shouldn't be pockets. If you're putting zips on those, what's happening there? I don't know. You have these pockets that are just designed to put your hands in, and yet it's possible to close those pockets entirely with a zip. How does that work? I don't know. So I suppose there's that. I suppose the thinking is, for those hand pockets, in fairness, you can store your gloves in there and you keep them closed until you need to put your hands in there. And if it's cold enough that you need to put your hands in there, then you're going to use the gloves and put the gloves on you. So it won't matter that the gloves could fall out of the pockets because it'll be on your hands. I suppose there's that. I don't think anyone's really thinking that you store your hand. Wait a minute, though. By the law of statistics, again, there are kids who have lost a hand in some tragic accident or being born missing a hand or something. God, there's going to be, oh, no, wait. I hadn't thought that through. I was going to say there's going to be kids who have the need to store their hand in their pocket. But no, if it's being amputated or if they haven't been born with a hand, they don't go carrying their hand around, do they? Unless it's an artificial hand, removable artificial hand, would there be occasion to remove that and put that in your zipped hand pocket? Well, I don't know, unless they've had to sadly get a very cheap model of artificial hand that's not waterproof and you have to put her away every time it rains or something. Suppose there's that. In which case, whatever government is responsible for that should be ashamed of themselves. The Minister for Health, put some funding into proper hands for these children. It's not good enough to just give them a voucher for a jacket that has hand pockets on it. That's not good enough. No. When I was a child, there was a big furore over the tax on children's clothes. I don't know what the full details were, but there was some sort of tax on either children's clothes or children's shoes. It was considered very, very controversial. They say children shouldn't have to pay tax on their clothes. It was this fucking disgrace. I presume the argument was that these children have to wear clothes. They're not allowed to earn yet. It's illegal for children to work. And yet they're supposed to be paying taxes on these clothes. And of course the tax is being paid by the parents, but the parents have to pay for the clothes and the tax. So it's a tax on having children who don't work. And that's I don't know. Delete that bit, that's stupid. That's stupid. Anyway, on with the show.
Into your head.
There's an app for non-smartphones now. This podcast is available on that app. And there's in fact being some subscribers coming to me through this app. You might want to know there's also a low bitrate edition of this podcast available. If you just search for Into Your Head Low Bitrate Edition or visit intoyourhead.ie, there's a low bitrate edition of this podcast available. Same content, a smaller file. Save you a bit of whatever you use on a non-smartphone on a not particularly good internet connection. You might want to know about that. Christ only knows how you managed to dial this up. It used to be in the early days a thing where you could make your podcast available by telephone. You get a telephone number that people can ring up and listen to your podcast. And this podcast, I think, was available on that for a while. I think so. Unless I'm dreaming that. It'll be a long time ago. This would be back 15 years ago at least. This podcast was available to dial up a number and listen to it. Now, I don't think anyone did, because why would you? But now here we are 15 years later and there's people subscribing to this on an app that's designed for flip phones and little Nokia phones that you take out of your pocket and it's a little tiny screen. And you go in, you go menu, 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 menu. You scroll down some menu and this thing pops up and you go play. And then you play this. You probably see the first three words of the show description, do you? It says Neil discusses cats, probably. There's 200 words after that. You're not going to scroll down. Understandably, you're not going to scroll down through the whole thing. For one thing, it's a podcast, not a book. You don't want to have a big, long reading assignment for every time you listen to something on your phone, no. But for another thing, if you're listening on one of those phones, I hope those things use earphones. Because if you're listening to that on the bus on this old Nokia phone and you play this over it, maybe you're listening to the low bitrate edition, Into Your Head Low Bitrate Edition, which you can search for in your app or visit the website. If you're listening to that on the bus and you're not using earphones, you're blasting it out over the speaker, that's going to give a very bad impression of this podcast. People are going to hear this and think, oh Christ, that sound is awful. Sounds like it's recorded on a xylophone or a loudhailer or something. That's not any fault of mine. That's because of your phone that you're listening to it on. It has a terrible speaker. I can't imagine a little flip phone or pocket phone of the type that was made in the 1990s is going to have a very good speaker on it. No, so use your earphones for that, please. Splash out on some reasonably decent earphones as well, because I don't want you to be hearing a bad version of this program either. It reflects badly on me if that happens. I don't want you doing something that reflects badly on me. I don't want me doing something that reflects badly on me either. That's why I've made sure to supply you with this information about how to listen. So that's how you listen to this program.
Are you going into your head?
I know it's at the end of a previous segment. I can be heard going, to me anyway, as I listen to it before it goes through the editing process. I hear myself saying, delete that last bit, that shit. or words to that effect. And I listened back to that and I think, why? Why should I delete that? It's perfectly fine. I like it. The bit about children's clothes, taxes and things. Why did the me of the past from about 10 minutes ago, just before I went for my third piss of this recording session, why did the me of that past want me to delete that bit? I don't want to delete that bit. I might overrule myself, I think. Now, of course, I'm not the me of the future who's going to be editing this. There's going to be a further me, probably tomorrow sometime or the next day, editing this in the future. And he's going to look back. You'll hear me of 10 minutes or so ago, whose bladder was quite full, as it turns out, at the time. So maybe that can be taken into account. You'll have heard me saying, delete that bit, that's a load of shit, or something along those lines. Hopefully he'll also hear this, which is me at the beginning of the next segment, pleading with him to reconsider. I suppose it's for the me of the future to decide. You've heard both sides of the argument now, so I trust the me of the future to make a reasonable decision about that. He'll have had a nice long sleep. He'll possibly have had a night of drinking, because I think I'm going to be drinking tomorrow night. So the day after that might be when the future me is editing this, or tomorrow. Or he might be quite drunk editing this. That remains to be seen. So if you hear me going, delete that bit, and I don't appear to have deleted anything, then that's why. You have a process here. There's a production process here involving the me from 10 minutes ago, and the me here now of the present, and the me of the future. We have a balanced discussion about it, and it may or may not get removed. So we'll see. Maybe he'll decide to keep that in. We'll remove this bit where I'm talking about it. I suppose that would make some sense. Future me knows best, I suppose. Anyway, I think we're approaching the end of the programme. Now, don't turn it off yet or skip to the next thing. Even though the last couple of episodes, I've gone, anyway, I think we're approaching the end of the programme, so goodbye. I know I've strayed from my usual thing where I go, I think we're approaching the end of the program, but then I go on for another several minutes. So no, I know it's so hard to tell nowadays. I'm becoming unpredictable. All the more reason why you shouldn't just switch off when they say we're approaching the end of the program. No, have a bit of patience and see. Wait and see. Have a surprise left in your life, for Christ's sake. Don't listen to every podcast going, oh, I wonder, is this near the end? And you hear someone going, oh, we're approaching the end now. And then you just go, oh, that's it. I don't want any more surprises. So I'm going to skip to the next thing that's on my playlist. I don't want to hear the end. I've spent my whole life listening to the ends of podcasts. I don't want to hear the ends of podcasts. They're tedious and boring. Some fella comes on and he says, thanks to our sponsors, some running shoe company that makes particularly strong heels for if you stub your heel against something, I don't know. Years and years and years ago, there was ads on this program. That part of my life where I put ads on podcasts is a thing of the past. That's from back in the 1980s when it was all greed is good. There was that fella in that film, Michael Douglas, but he was acting. He was playing this fella who was into greed. He said, greed is good. Greed is good. It's a good thing. I've got greed and I enjoy having greed, therefore it's good. You should all have greed. Because if you have greed, I wonder did he never went on to say, did you extend this into things outside of your financial endeavours? Because this was a movie about Wall Street and investing and stock buying. I wonder did he extend his greed thing to when he went for a drive-through, did he say supersize that all the time? Because that would be in keeping with his greed is good thing. Now, of course, that would be the particular segment of the greed world that's gluttony. And that's what that is. He's making this speech to loads of stockbrokers and things saying greed is good. You can't also say gluttony is good. Because for one thing, if you're doing this at some dinner that you're hosting and you're paying for everyone's dinner, you can't encourage them to eat more, because that's going to cost you. You don't want it to cost you more because you're greedy. So no, you ignore that particular part of the greed world involving gluttony. Maybe on the way home. There was that film. I don't want to get too far into this, because I've discussed this before quite recently. That billionaire fella in real life. There's this American investor who's in his 80s now, and every day he goes to work and decides what he's going to have for breakfast at the McDonald's drive-thru based on how his share prices are that morning or something. That fella. I don't mind, I'm going to interrupt myself for a moment there, just to point out that the name that I couldn't remember is Warren Buffet. Now, usually I wouldn't hear about that. I just put his name in the show description somewhere. It's just that this is the second time I've brought him up, and it's the second time I've brought him up in the context of drive-thru fast food breakfasts, and I couldn't remember his name last time either. And I put it in the show notes last time, and I put it in a caption on the video clip last time. But since I couldn't remember his name this time either, and now I can remember his name after listening back to that. His name is Warren Buffet, or Buffett, or whichever it is. It's quite appropriate, though, to call him Buffet, I suppose. Well, no, it's not. Wait a minute. No, it's not. And it should be, though. For a man of his wage, a man of his earning potential, earning capacity in his 80s, he's going to these drive-thrus. He should be going to, at the very least, an upmarket hotel breakfast buffet. So it's appropriate to call him Warren Buffet. It's curious that he never occurs to him. He probably sees his name in writing dozens of times a day. He sees the word buffet written right there in print, right in front of him, often in his own handwriting. He sees the word buffet. Probably every time he goes through a door in his office, he sees it above the door on some sign somewhere. And people are saying it to him all the time, probably. They're probably saying, hello, Mr. Buffet, Buffet, Buffet. Still, the penny doesn't drop. It never occurs to him. I should be having, at the very least, a buffet breakfast. I know you're probably thinking, if you're that rich, he is a billionaire. If you're that rich and that old, you should be having a sit-down breakfast served to you by waiters or waitresses, which you might assume is even more desirable. But no, I would argue buffet breakfast in a hotel is the best form of dining away from home breakfast, unless you want room service breakfast, which is a close second. No, the buffet breakfast is one of the highest forms of breakfast dining outside of room service. I think we all know that. We don't like to say it, but we all much, much prefer a buffet breakfast in a hotel than sit down and have it brought to you by a waiter at breakfast in a hotel. I think we all know that. We all know. We don't want to take 8 slices of toast. We want to take 5 sausages. We don't want to have to tell the waiter that we want 5 sausages. No. We want to go over to a buffet, and while no one's looking, we lift up each of the metal things that keep the heat on, and you take out your 85 sausages and your 2 eggs and your 5 slices of toast on exactly the way you want them. You don't want some waiter doing that. That's far superior, and that's why you're happy to pay far more for a buffet breakfast than for one served to you by a waiter. Now, of course, if you get the right hotel, you can get close to that effect with room service breakfast by just ticking every box on the form and hanging it on the door. So that can get pretty close. In the right hotel, that can get pretty close to being as good as a buffet breakfast. Anyway, this fella, Warren Buffet, he's going around seeing the word buffet, buffet, buffet this, buffet that, buffet everything, but still eating. You know, I'll stop at the McDonald's drive-thru for my breakfast. You're a fucking idiot, Warren Buffet. You might be very smart, but you're also an idiot. You've wasted your life. Every time you go to one of those drives, I'm going to have to interrupt my interruption there just for a moment so that I don't sound like a complete fucking idiot. As I listen back to that interruption now, I think, actually, I haven't listened back to it yet. To be perfectly honest, I've only just finished saving it. I haven't even listened back to the interruption, but I'm thinking about what I said when I was interrupting myself, and I'm thinking, I sound like a complete fucking idiot saying Warren Buffet sees his name everywhere all day, which is true. He sees his name every time he does some paperwork. It's got his name on it. It says, Dear Mr. Buffet, he sees the name Buffet everywhere he looks. It's on all his paperwork and above the door in his buildings and everywhere anyone talks to him, they call him Mr. Buffet. I'm claiming that if you have buffet said to you all day, every day, there's no way you can forget the concept of buffet breakfast or the word buffet. You have the word buffet in your head all day. But there was I in the original segment, and on the previous episode where I talked about Warren Buffet and couldn't remember his name at all, even though I had him in my head all the time, literally talking about Buffet, a fella called Buffet, whose name was Buffet. His name was Buffet. I wasn't talking about buffet breakfasts in the original segment. But in the original segment a few months ago where I talked about his drive-through breakfast habit and I couldn't remember his name, I was talking about him all the time in the context of breakfast. I was talking about this fella called Buffet. And not only did it never occur to me that that's his name, Buffet, it never occurred to me to even think about suggesting that he have a buffet breakfast the first time I talked about him. And then in this episode today now, I start talking about him for several minutes. Then I remember his name and then I think, oh, it's perfectly possible that he can go around all day hearing his name and hearing buffet, 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 buffet. There's no way he'd not think of buffets. He wouldn't think of buffet breakfasts. I listen to myself thinking about him. This is the second episode now where I've talked about Warren Buffet for several minutes and not even being able to think of the word buffet as being his name. Never mind thinking of it as a breakfast option. I didn't even think of the name Buffet as a name while I was thinking about Warren Buffet. That's a bit. Wait a minute, though. That doesn't make sense either, does it? No. This interruption is nonsense, but I want to explain why I interrupted. For a minute there, it didn't seem like nonsense, because I was trying to claim that the very fact that I'm talking and thinking about Warren Buffet, it's not occurring to me that his name is Buffet. I couldn't remember his name. So I'm trying to claim that by thinking and talking about Warren Buffet, it's possible to do that and not remember the name Buffet. And yet somehow, No, that doesn't make sense. This is nonsense. It's not nonsense though, I'm expressing it wrongly. I'm going to sort this out now before I finish this interruption. Hold on, I'm going to get this right. Warren Buffet, he goes around his day. No, it's not about Warren Buffet, it's about me. Hold on. Because I'm talking about Warren Buffet there for several minutes, where I can't remember that his name is Warren Buffet. I only remember that in the interruption, the one that I'm interrupting now. And I talked about him on the previous segment. And oh yes, now I know what my point is. My point is that in both the original segment here and in the segment on a previous episode a few months ago, both of them I was talking about Warren Buffet and his drive-through breakfast habits. Now, I couldn't remember the name Buffet in either of those segments initially, but I talked about Warren Buffet for several minutes and I talked about what he does for breakfast. And even then, the word buffet didn't occur to me, even though I was talking about Warren Buffet. And also the concept of buffet breakfast didn't occur to me until just today. I think it was during the interruption today, was it? I think so. So that suggests that if my name was Warren Buffet, I could be walking around seeing the word buffet all day. And it's still possible that it might not occur to me that my name is Buffet, even though I'd seen it all the time. And therefore, it might also not occur to me that the buffet breakfast is a possibility. Because I was implying earlier that because he sees the word buffet all the time, because it's his name, there's no reason he wouldn't have thought of the concept or the possibility of having a buffet breakfast. If I can manage to talk about Warren Buffet for several minutes while even remembering his name, which is Buffet, so if I can do that, then I suppose it's perfectly possible that it wouldn't occur to him to think of buffet breakfasts, or even of his own name. Well then, I don't think he forgets his own name, does he? I watched a documentary about him recently. I don't think there was any sign that he was forgetting his own name. Although, did they ask him his name? I don't think so. I'm not sure. Was it one of those documentaries where you don't really hear the interviewer, though? You just hear him talking. I don't know. In which case, usually you'd have the fella, they say, can you please say your name just for the camera? They say, what's your name? And they show him going, I'm Warren Buffet. I don't know if they did that, but that might be just a stylistic thing of the documentary maker. So no, it's perfectly possible to be Warren Buffet and see the name all the time and still have it not occur to you that buffet breakfasts are a possibility. And that's why it's reasonable that he would carry on with his drive-through breakfast habit for years. Although he's presumably been to a lot of hotels, he knows buffet breakfasts exist. Maybe he doesn't do a lot of business travel, I don't know. Or he goes and he sleeps on his private jet or something. I suppose that's a possibility. Would you have a buffet on a private jet? I don't know. If it's Air Force One or something and you have to bring a lot of staff with you and the press corps, maybe you'd have a buffet on that. But probably not as good a buffet as you'd get in a hotel, because you can't just have hot things sitting around that can just get thrown around every time there's a bit of turbulence. So no. It's probably not much of a buffet on the plane, even a private jet. I think the closest you would get to a buffet on the plane would be some sort of drinks dispenser with a lot of safety precautions on it, and maybe a vending machine. I don't know, they couldn't just leave a big hot pan with sausages on it lying around, so no. So I think that answers my own question. Anyway, back to the interruption. An idiot. You've wasted your life. Every time you go to one of those drive-thrus, you are wasting your life. And that's all I have to say about that. Anyway, back to the me of the past who couldn't remember the name Warren Buffet. Only because he wasn't trying very hard. I remembered it as soon as I listened back. I thought, wait, what's that fella's name? And it came to me straight away. So it wasn't really that difficult. I just wasn't trying hard enough, I suppose. Oh, why would I? Why would I? I suppose because, I don't know, greed isn't as good as people claim it is. There's more to life than, well, there isn't more to life than trying hard. Or is there? Is there more to life than trying hard? I suppose there's not giving a shit. That's another part. There are different ways to live your life, I suppose. Anyway, back to the me of the past. Donald's drive-thru based on how his share prices are that morning or something. That fella. And that's greed. Or is it though? Wait a minute. Is that rewarding greed? Maybe it is. You're rewarding greed with gluttony. But gluttony is a part of greed. So if you're greedy and you decide you're going to reward greed by being a glutton, glutton is already a type of greed. So you can just skip straight to the gluttony and then reward yourself for the gluttony, because that's greed. Reward yourself for the gluttony with something else. So you do the gluttony regardless of whether your stock prices are good or not. But you want to reward greed. Gluttony is a form of greed. So do the gluttony regardless. And that will get added into your greed totals for the day. And you earn something for that. I don't know what you earn. Maybe that's why they have these little stickers on the coffee cups in McDonald's that you collect up. And when you have 9 or 10 of them, you get a free coffee or something. That's to reward gluttony, which is a form of greed. That probably started in the 1980s, did it? During the greed is good era. And of course, back in those days, the coffee in McDonald's was appalling. I think we're approaching the end of the programme.